The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 U.S.-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. P-A-I-R.com.
They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
Clubhouse collapse? Brainiac Bumble? Computo Catastrophe?
New Adventures of Superboy number 50. Dial V for Villain. Published February 1984. Written by Paul Kupperberg with art by Kurt Schaffenberger. Synopsis: the H-Dial is stolen from the Metropolis Museum, and chaos follows.
We are jumping into not a Legion of Superheroes book, nor is it an adventure comics book. Mm-hmm. It is the New Adventures of Superboy number 50. And of course, the 50 means anniversary issue, even though this has probably been, what, 4 years, maybe 5 years since this series has been going on.
This is 84. New Adventures of Superboy, I think, debuted in 1980. Right about that. It was the same time that the Legion took over Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. So it would have come out about the same time as, I'm going to say, Legion 273. Someone's going to call me on that. But yeah, this is a book that's been around for about four and a half years.
And it is a triple crossover, because not only do we get to see Superboy splashing around in the lake with all the ladies and kissing on a girl who's not Lana Lang or Lori Lemiris. I forget what her name is. Does she even have a double L name?
She does have a name. It's not a double L name.
Yeah, then she's not. She doesn't count. She doesn't count. She's like a one day at the lake stand. That's all she is. So we get a Superboy
of the Superboy supporting cast.
She gets we get a Superboy adventure. Mm-hmm. We also get, obviously, because it's on this show, Legion of Clubhouse, so the Legion of Superheroes show up. And then we also get Dial H for Hero.
Right. And Dial H for Hero at this point has been the backup feature in Daring New Adventures of Superboy, or whatever the heck the actual title is, since they got bumped from their spot in Adventure Comics for, wait for it, Supergirl. So it's basically just a whole do-si-do around the Superman corner of the DC universe. But
yeah,
the Dial H story with Chris King and Vicky Grant has been the backup story in New Adventures of Superboy. And it's very important that you remember Chris and Vicky, because they're not in this issue.
Yeah, no. So the Dial H for Hero, for those of you that don't know, it's got four buttons on it, H-E-R-O. You push those, and every time you do, you turn into a new superhero. You get the powers of some superhero. And in past adventures, you may have been turned into people like Plastic Man, or maybe somebody else that is a well-known hero. But for a lot of the times, you're just some guy with powers.
At this point in time, Plastic Man is the only existing superhero that any of the Dial-Hers have turned into. Later on, we somehow discover that what the H-Dial is doing is stealing powers from heroes throughout the multiverse. But
yeah, that's for another time, not for this episode. And Dial H is being unveiled at a museum in Metropolis in the far future, where our evil villain, Nylor Truggs, you can remember his last name is Truggs because he wears Uggs in this issue.
Right. And of course, there's that Quentin Tarantino movie, The Ballad of Nylor Truggs.
Yeah. So that's a thing.
Anyway, Nylor Truggs presses the thing and he turns into the Cyclone. But it's not Ma Hunkle or Maxine Hunkle. No. So this is the first appearance of the Cyclone. So if you go up to the Wikipedia and you do a search for the Cyclone and it's the all about Maxine Hunkle, you should go in there and you should change it. Originally, the Cyclone first appeared in New Adventures of Superboy number 50 when Nylor Truggs used the Dial H for Hero dial. And then you can get all sorts of Wikipedia people jumping all over you for months as you keep going in and changing it back to first appearance of the Cyclone.
Oh, no. They'll ban you long before that happens.
Oh, no. It'll be fun because your defense is the truth, which you have, because you can show them New Adventures of Superboy number 50, the first appearance of the Cyclone. Okay.
Dear friends, do not do this.
Do it. Do it. You're a weakling if you do not.
There was an Earth One Cyclone back in the 60s in Justice
League. Yeah, put that in too. You don't see that in the Cyclone Wikipedia entry. You know why? Because Jeff Johns runs the Cyclone Wikipedia page.
I wouldn't put it past him. I mean,
now, here's the interesting thing. If a villain tries to use the Dial H for hero, he will turn into a hero, but there is some mysterious power that prevents you from doing bad things when you have hero powers.
Well, it's important that we, and by important, I mean, it doesn't matter at all, but I would like to take a moment to establish that this H dial is in fact Chris King's H dial, which has, as you mentioned, four buttons. Robbie Reed's H dial.
Robbie Reed doesn't count.
Right. Robbie Reed's dial had more buttons. Robbie Reed's dial did not force you to become a hero. It was actually possible to dial other words on Robbie Reed's dial.
Yeah.
At one point, he dialed H for horror. Of course, there was a guy who dialed V for villain back in the 60s. But this is definitely Chris's because it's in the form of a wristwatch. And Chris's, we find out later, was created specifically by someone who knew about Robbie's. And it was specifically designed to make you a hero.
Yeah, it was the Wizard Shazam that did that.
It was not the Wizard.
But it was. Anyway, here's the thing. The reason why none of that is important, but is important is how this issue ends, which we'll get to when we're at the end of the story. But remember this, put a pin right here, dear listener. Okay. And in about, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, we'll tell you why that's important. Anyway, Nylor Truggs, who wears Uggs, needs to escape because Chameleon Boy is there and he dials up the H button and he somehow gets transported into the past of 1984, where Superboy is hanging out.
Nylor Truggs and his hair plugs end up in the year 1980. Technically, in the year 1974, because remember, Superboy is the Adventures of Superman when he was a boy, 10 years in the past of the current DC universe.
Also, I should also point out, save for the girls that Superboy kisses in this issue, it's an all sausage fest issue.
It really is. Well, and the girl that he kisses, her name is Lisa. Lisa was designed specifically.
Lisa Loeb?
Not Lisa Loeb. Her name is Lisa, and she is in
this
book
on the second floor
for a very important reason. You know how in the 1970s, I'm ignoring you now, Superman had his own supporting cast at GBS.
Yes.
The Galactic Broadcasting System.
Right.
One of them included Jerk Jock Steve Lombard.
Yep.
And Steve Lombard has a teenage counterpart in Bash Bashford.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hey, Bash Bashford and his best friend Tom Tomford. And don't forget Fred Fredford and his archenemy Ford Fordford.
Ford Fordford, of course, just misunderstood what the actual ruling creature on the planet was. But Bash Bashford was added to the Superboy cast to give them essentially a Steve Lombard type, which means that Lisa, who is here to create a love triangle between Clark Kent and Lana Lang, is Cat Grant.
Mm.
So as the Cat Grant analog, she makes out with him here to make Lana Lang, who was famously created to basically be teenage Lois Lane.
Yeah.
Yeah. To make her jealous and to do weird things, because it's the 80s and the illusion of change, as you know, Stan Lee will tell you, is more important than actual change. So Bash Bashford
is the dumbest name that you could ever come up with.
Is Brad.
No, it's Bash Bashford.
Nobody likes Brad. So they just call him Bash for short, because his last name is Bashford. It's Brad Bashford. But Bash Bashford, much more fun to say. Lisa Davis is her name.
Yeah, not a double L. That's so weird. It is so weird that you'd think that Paul Kupperberg would figure out what the heck is going on with the naming conventions of people in Superman's life.
Well, Kupperberg cares about three things. Kupperberg cares about getting paid. Kupperberg cares about an action sequence, which is why our first appearance of Superboy is just like swooping down to deflect bullets so that, and I swear to you, so that Gerald Ford is not killed by the
cast of Saturday Night Live.
Castro.
Yeah.
That looks like Fidel Castro, but he also cares about wacky fun. And that's why Lisa Davis in here shows up, and Clark Kent apparently pops up out of the water, having been underwater for 20 minutes.
Hey, Superboy flies fast. He's only been under the water for 30 seconds.
Yeah, but nobody cares. Pete Ross is in this too, but nobody cares.
Yeah, nobody cares about poor Pete Ross until things go horribly wrong. Anyway, Nylor Truggs. He wears Uggs and has hair plugs. He shows up to Lex Luthor, young Lex Luthor, who has been recently imprisoned, and says, "Hey, he can't have hair plugs because all his hair fell out and it's all Superboy's fault. Superboy.
Butt and put it on his head.
Anyway, Nylor convinces him that if I break you out, you can develop a time machine and I can go to the future and I can cause havoc. But in the meantime, I have tinkered with the Dial H for Hero Watch and I've turned it into Dial V for Villain. So now he can become any villain he wants and do villainous things. And more importantly, he can turn other people into villains, including Bash Bashford and Tom Tomford and Fred Fredford and Ford Fordford.
Lisa Loeb.
He can turn them all into villains, and I presume it'll be Pete Ross, too, because Pete's like, I don't want to commit villains, and does it anyway. So we get the Smasher and the High Roller this, hilarity ensues.
I do like the fact that the villains in this issue look goofy and old school.
Yeah, these aren't like real villains, though, right? These aren't. Smasher is just a Smasher guy, and the High Roller guy that doesn't know how to gamble in Vegas.
Yeah, exactly. But these are Schaffenberger characters. And of course, Kurt Schaffenberger at this point has been in the industry for decades. He was originally one of the guys at Fawcett Comics, drawing Ibis and Bullet Man and Captain Marvel. So these really feel like, especially the Smasher and the first guy that we see, Landslide, feel like goofy Golden Age Captain Marvel villains. And of course, Kurt Schaffenberger drawing them makes them look like they're awesome, wacky fun. And then, of course, they end up fighting Wildfire and Element Lad. And I'm just like, this is total mood whiplash, you guys.
It really is crazy because we get Wildfire, we got Starboy. Does Mon-El show up? I forget who all of them. It's all guys.
Brainiac, it's all guys. Five, Colossal Boy, Chameleon Boy, Element Lad, Starboy, and Wildfire. So
yeah,
six male Legionnaires and Superboy. So technically seven male Legionnaires. You know, and they're like, we're going to fight and we're going to stop Nylor Truggs, who wears Uggs
and has hair plugs
and eats dead bugs, from taking over the future. But
yeah, but the problem is, so there's a lot of problems with this story.
Yes, it's wacky.
So many problems with this story. The first problem with this story is it's never explained how the Legion travels back in time. Right. Are they using a time bubble? Are they using the time cube? Is there a rip in space time continuum? Did they use some kind of weird portal technology? None of that is ever explained. The next thing is they all change into street clothes to go to Ma and Pa Kent's house so they can have a barbecue, whatever the heck that is. except for Chameleon Boy, who just shows up as an alien walking around, and everyone else is wearing their, you know, 1970s disco garb. And Pa Ken is left standing there going, gulp, that must be an alien. And he doesn't pull out a shotgun and shoot anybody or nothing, which is weird because this is Kansas in the middle of, in the middle of the scare of aliens coming to get you.
In his defense, he has raised an alien for the past 16 years.
Yeah, but a good alien, one that looks like a human. That's why Chameleon Boy is one of them weird looking aliens.
One of the things that fascinates me is that Chameleon Boy, who can change his shape.
Oh, yeah, he could grow hair if he wanted.
Camouflage himself.
No, he doesn't.
But somehow Wildfire does.
Yeah.
How in God's name?
He put a fake mustache on his mirror.
It must be one of those, you know, incredibly realistic rubber masks that they have in the 70s.
The other thing that's really weird. The other thing that's really weird is, why does Pa Kent always have a bandage on his head? Is he like a Les Nessman where he's always got an injury? Is he always getting knocked out at the general store? Is Clark accidentally throttling him too hard? And now Pa Kent is suffering from a horrific mental concussion?
Okay. Your weird, psychotic Simpsons crazy fantasies are scaring me, but
no, it's true. Look, he's got a bandage on his head.
He does have. Do you want
no with no explanation? Yeah, because he was probably at the grocery store. Because remember, back in the day, the Kents weren't farmers. They ran a grocery store, and Clark was always supposed to be stocking the shelves. And of course, in Clark's haste to go make out with Lisa Davis, he was always doing it so fast, and so he would throw a can and he'd hit his dad in the head one too many times.
The previous issue of Superboy Volume 2, Number 49, with a really freaky deaky cover by Gil Kane.
Doesn't matter.
It's got Zatara in it. Zatara shows up in Smallville and accidentally summons a barbarian from the past.
Uh-huh.
And the barbarian clunks Pa Kent, who, by the way, you'll notice this is young Pa Kent, yes, having been youthified in 1968, clunks Pa Kent on the head. And Pa Kent now has this head wound, which eventually leads to him realizing that he has to keep his son's secret and walk into a tornado, because only a man with a serious head wound.
So the weird thing is, the weird thing is at this point, they're still grocery store owners, which is weird because Superman, the movie, the motion picture, came out in 78. And that firmly established not only Smallville in Kansas. That's the first place that Smallville is located in Kansas, Ford County specifically.
Right.
But also established them as farmers. And so I don't know when that retcon happens. Maybe it's after Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah. The New Earth Superman by John Byrne.
Incorporates that they're farmers thing.
Yeah. They live on a farm and.
Yeah. Interesting. It's interesting. Anyway, good guys fighting bad guys. And then we get a fourth crossover in this book because Crypto, the Superdog, shows up.
Crypto.
And while everyone's bashing Nylor Trugs and Mountain Man and the Smasher and the High Roller and all the Riverdale kids are like, oh, please, we don't want to commit crimes. Crypto is just like, oh, there's the Dial H watch. I will bite it off the Nylor's wrist and chew it all to pieces, which will break the spell and everybody will go back to normal and I will save the day. There's a big ha 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 moment.
It is kind of telling that these seven legionnaires, many of them partially educated, one of them supposedly a super genius, are so focused on fighting Clark's friends that the dog saves the day. I mean, that's a very kind of, that's a wacky golden age.
This whole issue is just a wacky nonsense stuff because
I think it's meant to be retconny, or it's supposed to be retro flashbacky stuff. Like, hey, this is what the Silver Age was like, but it wasn't really.
I mean, it was,
but it wasn't. I feel like this story, the way it was presented, the straightforward, weird way it was presented, would not have flown in the Weisinger era, because Weisinger would have wanted a big twist on the cover.
Oh, yeah. He definitely would have wanted something where they put down the girls and make fun of the underprivileged people.
Which hero will figure out the High Roller's weakness?
Right. Well, here's the thing. For those of you that have skipped ahead 10 minutes to get to this part where I said, hey, put a pin in this because we're going to come back to it. Chameleon Boy is really upset because he told the museum owner that he would get the Dial H dial back. He feels responsible for it. He comes back and it's all in pieces, and he's gone through all this trouble to bring back all the little bits and pieces of a broken Dial H for Hero watch. And the museum owner is like, oh my, this is a terrible thing. Welp, I guess I'll just go down to the basement and get the other one. At which point Chameleon Boy is like, what? And because he's Chameleon Boy, he can have his eyes bug out and his jaw drop and his tongue fly out. Which, so that other H dial is either the other four dial one, or it is the Robbie Reed H dial.
It's Vicky's H dial, because the Robbie Reed H dial, we find out later. It's not like we're doing a Dial H for podcast. That's what we need to do.
It would actually be Dial P for podcast.
Dial P for podcast. Yeah. And we will go over.
There probably is already Dial P for podcast out there. I know there's a Robbie Reed podcast out there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So here's the deal. It is Vicky's pendant, because Robbie Reed's dial actually doesn't make it to the 30th century. Yeah, on the Earth One, in the Earth One continuity. Later stories just really mess everything up and actually have H dials everywhere. There's like H dials coming out your ears. You go to 30th century McDonald's, you get an H dial. There's H dials everywhere.
This is just such a...
It's really, it's retro, but it's retro in a way that almost works. But I feel like it doesn't work. And the simple reason for me that it doesn't work is there's a framing sequence drawn by Keith Giffen. And this is full on Keith Giffen, mm-hmm. 80s Giffen. Mm-hmm. It opens with the Superman museum and a big Superman with a weird rubbery head. And then we cut to Kurt Schaffenberger. So we go from that weird angular, you know, dark patches, freaky shadows, eclipso faces, everybody's a freaky alien, to Kurt Schaffenberger, who, you know, is probably best known for drawing Lois Lane's title for a good 10 years. So it's crazy. It's like you're like, hey, I'm going to buy this comic book, right? The first five pages are Frank Miller inking with a sledgehammer. Then I have a second feature, and that's drawn by the guy who does Aw Yeah, Tiny Titans, Art Balthazar. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And then from Art Balthazar, we're going to go straight to the guy who does Hard Boiled, and everybody's going to be covered in blood. Then we're going to go right back to Art Balthazar. No, you can't. You shouldn't. Honestly,
it's a choice.
I'll tell you why this issue is here. It was a mistake on my part.
I mean, it's got the Legion. We're covering all the appearances of the Legion.
Well, we're not covering all of them. We're covering the ones that matter, and this one doesn't. I honestly, the reason that it's here is because I thought that this was my brain remembered this as a Levitz Giffen joint because of the Giffen art on the open.
Mm.
And it's not Levitz at all. And if it hadn't, based on the events in this issue, I do not feel that there was any reason to cover this unless it was Levitz. This is, I mean, we've jumped over. We haven't talked about it recently because there aren't as many, but we've jumped over the occasional issue here and there, or like an Adult Legion appearance or a flashback or a cameo at somebody's wedding. I mean, there are Legion appearances that...
Well, the Legion are doing something in this book, right? I mean, this is a...
Yeah, they're getting one-upped by a Great Dane. I mean...
This is a, you know, a Legion-centric story featuring Superboy and the rest of the gang. Here's the problem, though. Mm-hmm. Nylori Trugs, who has Uggs and has hair plugs and eats bugs, and mm-hmm. Likes to play Dig Dug in 1984.
That's good, yeah.
He goes back in time because he's going to create these earthquake machines that he's going to bury, so 1,000 years in the future, they go off and he can have his revenge or whatever. That is never explained in detail beyond what happened to that. Because there's nothing in there where the heroes destroy the machines.
That's stupid.
Yeah. Second thing is Lex Luthor invents the TARDIS and mm-hmm. then doesn't use it.
That the appearance of Lex Luthor here is really puzzling to me because,
well, it's a Superboy comic and, you know.
Well, yeah, but it also feels like just sort of just a stupid cameo. And, you know, again, it's one of DC's anniversary issues. It's got 1984 gave us a fourth color on the color, or on the covers, rather. Because four color comics, you know, red, green, so I don't know what it is. Who cares?
There are
four
colors.
The fifth color was gold. So if you look at the logo, anniversary issue number 50, they actually printed that in gold.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their big gimmick, because this was the year of Superman 400. It was either Batman 400. It may not have been Batman 400, now that I think of it. It may have been Detective 400. But there were a bunch of anniversary issues. There was a Justice League anniversary, I believe, and there were a whole bunch of gold logo issues where they're like, ooh. And then, of course, we get into 84, 85, 86, where DC sort of accidentally invents the modern variant cover with Man of Steel number one. And it's just, it's one of those things where, ooh, this is a big, shiny cover issue. But boy, if I'd have paid two books worth,
because this is a $1.20
comic, is 60 cents. Yeah, it's a buck and a quarter. This is a $2 worth of pricing, and it's just
oof. I mean, you get a lot in it. So I would say, if I was a 10-year-old in 1984, which I was not, right, I probably would have eaten this up. I probably would have been like, "Look, this has got the Legion in it, and that's really cool. It's got the Dial H thing, which I've been reading as a backup. That's really cool. It's got Lex Luthor just escaping out of jail, and they're making jokes. It's like, man, we might as well just install a revolving door on this jail, because Lex Luthor comes in and he goes right back out. They've got that in there. I mean, it's got everything. It's got Clark making out with a girl. You know, it's got everything a young boy would want in it. Including a dog, and a boy's best friend, of course, is a dog. And so Crypto saving the day makes perfect sense for this book. But the fact that Lex never uses the time machine, that those earthquake engines never do anything, that Nihilor Trug's plan is questionable at best, is just makes for the story to not be very good, especially when it's like, here comes Crypto out of nowhere. I've been out in space for 6 months. I'm going to chew this man's watch, which, you know, bad dog. You shouldn't just some stranger's watch. You jump up and start ripping it up. And then the whole, well, I guess I'll go down to the basement and get the other one. Just it's just a giant joke.
It's a shaggy dog story.
Yeah.
You know, and then you saw, what do you have in his mouth? The brick.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's not bad. I mean, granted, Schaffenberger art is really cute. I like the Giffen art. It's just that I don't want to see them back to back any more than I want marmalade on my cheeseburger. But I feel like this is just, it's an okay. If I were going to do the meatloaf rating, 2.5. And a lot of that is just the Schaffenberger art, because it feels like silly plot. And at the end, all that's really missing is Brainiac falling out of frame and his feet sticking
up in the air. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would give this a little bit below average as far as just on story. Just, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You have to do a lot of backflips in order to get the characters where they need to be for this story. And it's a lot of backflips that just don't make a whole lot of necessary sense in this piece. So there we go. Let's see if the next issue is any better.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Legion of Superheroes number 311, Destruction by Design. Published May 1984. Written by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz, with art by Keith Giffen. Synopsis: the return of Computo.
Legion of Superheroes 311, Destruction by Design. Now, this is a Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz book. It's by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz, with art by Keith Giffen, as Jason just said. So we just repeated ourselves there.
We often do.
The issue starts out with the Legion Clubhouse collapsing. Oh, no.
It exploded.
Oh, no. And then we find out why, because deep in the bowels of the remnants of the Legion Clubhouse, which just got a redesign, what, like 10 years ago in the comic book term?
Actually, this design is from 1968.
Really? The previous one was 68. That doesn't seem right.
This Legion headquarters arrived in Adventure 367, or rather was being built in Adventure 367. Now, a point of order, it was blown up during or right around Earth War and rebuilt, but it was rebuilt with an identical design. Yeah, just that big. So that whole thing where it's just like a high rise in the middle of Smallville, this is the Legion headquarters that was in play from 68 to 84. So,
yeah, so it's about time that it got blowed up real good. And we find out why, because Brainiac is deep in the bowels of the Legion HQ doing an exorcism.
Oh, money, buddy.
What was I went and looked. This would really be between The Exorcist 2 and Exorcist 3 is when this issue would have come out. And it's just really, you know, it's creepy, right? He's in there trying to excise Computo from Invisible Kid 2's sister. And of course, she's all possessed and the head spinning around and the pea soup and the crawling up the wall and all that stuff.
Your mother divides by zero in hell.
And of course, Brainiac is just like, I think as crazy as Computo is, I will flip this switch and allow Computo to try to get control of the systems and destroy the world. But instead, I will use my force shield instead of protecting me. I will envelop Computo into that.
Yes, I will use it to destroy Danielle. And he says out loud, I don't have a cure for Danielle Focar. I don't have a cure. He says this out loud and has Computo trapped. And I feel like he's got to be lying, not just because, spoilers, by the end of the issue, he does, in fact, save Danielle Focar. I feel like, though, he lies because he knows Computo can hear him. And it's a weird moment that feels like, you know, it feels like one of those Levitt's twist moments that should have been called out. And I feel like, honestly, that we are supposed to take away from this that Brainiac was basically performing, oh, no, please, no, don't stick yourself in my force field and steal my only superpower.
Don't throw me into the briar patch.
Right. He was Brer Rabbiting it, but I don't know.
You know, that's really all that happens in this issue, because everyone else is standing around outside. We've got Bouncing Boy and Duo Damsel and Irish Captain, what's his name?
Patio Furniture.
No, come on now. That's a little bit too far. What's his name?
What? I honestly don't know.
Because this is like the second time that he showed up in this series.
I'm going to say Captain Tam O'Shanter.
Again, I apologize to all of our Irish listeners.
Cathal, if you're out there, mea culpa.
But yeah, this is the second time that he shows up, which I think is very strange. Siobhan is there. And then some guy who won a contest or something to get a tour of the Legion clubhouse shows up.
Do you remember Flint Brodge? We've seen him before.
No, I don't remember him. He is such a non-memorable character.
Flint Brodge appeared in Superboy either 209 or 210 back in the Cockrum days. He's named after Mike Flynn and Harry Brodges, who created the Legion Outpost fanzine.
Oh, Flint right.
Flint Brodge is the Legion's number one fanboy.
Oh, right.
And he's getting a tour here because he's like, I'm your number one fan. I'm your number one fan. But I think this is the second of maybe three or four appearances.
Okay. Anyway, Brainiac crawls out from the rubble, and then all of a sudden, kabow kazoom, Legion headquarters is rebuilt with a totally new design, a big floating fortress that looks menacing, and everyone's like, wow, that's pretty cool. How'd you do that? And Brainiac is like, I have rebuilt Computo. And Computer's like, yes, master, what can I do for you?
At which point, Duo Damsel is like, what the? And then they cut to.
And then everybody laughs because, ha ha ha, Computo is now a little floating sphere that will do anything Brainiac tells him to do. Ha 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 ha.
Brainiac is laughing. But if you look at the last couple of panels, no one else finds this funny.
Well, no. And so I really question if this is something that's building up. Remember, not too long ago, Matthew, Brainiac kind of had a mental breakdown and had to be institutionalized.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if this is a slippage back to his not right mental state.
It definitely feels like it. And if you look at the faces of Chuck and Lornu Tane, he's utterly horrified, and she's got this look like she's about to burst out crying and then deck Brainiac.
Oh, yeah, because what better way to introduce the new Computo than in front of two-thirds of the people that Computo killed?
Yeah, even Flint cannot believe that this is happening. And Flint is as dumb as a bag of hammers in a burlap sack. So,
yeah,
I don't know, man. I will say this. I really like the design of this weird floating magnet Legion clubhouse. I feel like it looks super, super futuristic in a way that a lot of things don't. But I also say that because this is probably the point where, you know, I start reading Legion and I go, yeah, that's what the real clubhouse looks like.
Mm.
So I don't know if a regular person just picking this up for the first time and seeing this strange Cthulian monstrosity floating in a beam of light is going to say, you know, that building is pretty awesome.
Honestly, the building looks very intimidating, like it's a battleship ready to blow things up. So again, reflecting on Brainiac's mental state and then having him have Computo rebuild the clubhouse as a floating fortress of death should be pretty telling for people.
Yes. And this is another one that is obviously a Tesseract. Because, you know, as we've mentioned many times, the old upside down rocket ship clubhouse was never stated, but had to be bigger on the inside. This one absolutely is, and Brainiac will tell us this is bigger on the inside. So even though it looks enormous, the innards are actually even more enormous than that.
Well, that makes sense because they made a reference to the TARDIS in that Superboy comic. So it all makes sense. Also, before we get out of this issue, we have to follow up with Dawnstar and her quest to find her man. She's on a cosmic quest to find her soulmate. What? And she goes out on the grand tour of the universe, only to come back to Venus to discover Wildfire. And she's like, well, I guess this means we're meant to be together regardless of what my parents say. And so happily ever after ? Although I do notice that Dawnstar's mom never says, do you think Wildfire can convince the kids to be Jewish? There's none of that in this story.
No, but you know, she is like, he must know he is not a full person. And I'm like, and I get it. You know, Wildfire is not a human being. He's certainly not a character that you can say in a modern parlance would even be, I think you can't really even imply a disability here. He's, you know, an energy being.
He's a non-corporeal being.
Right. But the way that she responds to it just feels wrong. He's not whole, but your daughter loves him. You know, she's got a cool fashion sense and the shiniest face you'll ever see, but she also,
and he explodes on contact.
Right. I think for the first time ever, she admits that out loud. She says, I have feelings for you too. And that's kind of cool. And he says, maybe we'll just be, you know, friends and it will be cool and it'll be the beginning of a beautiful friendship, which, given, you know, his weirdness in the past about females and their attention, I also feels kind of like a step forward for Wildfire as an adult too, because I seem to, what, it wasn't that long ago that the girls was like, oh no, oh yes, Wildfire, we're going to manipulate you with our feminine wiles. And you know, he's gonna be like, okay. But yeah, I don't know.
We've already talked about Dawnstar being portrayed as a Native American in full costume, and they decide to double down on her peoples. Like, not even double down, like triple down, quadruple down on their look. I guess by this point, we just have to shrug our shoulders and say, boy, 1984 sure was a thing.
Mm.
So that's that story. Hey, congratulations to the young couple. Yay. Oh, yay. Also, we get to see the official appearance of Interlac. So you mm-hmm. can't, you too can learn Interlac in this issue. That's very important because you they say, hey,
form until 1988.
What's that?
You too didn't form till 1988.
Oh, no, 1988. The Joshua Tree came out long before that. Anyway. You too can learn Interlac. That's what they say. And they say that all other versions of Interlac are thrown out the window, like the OpenGL 1.0. And they say now you can go and find all of the hidden messages that we write in Interlac to you. And spoiler alert, everyone, every translation says eat more Ovaltine. Sorry, that's the way it's going to be.
El Dorado. The song is reversible, but time is not.
So that's that issue. I think this is fairly forgettable issue. Unless there's something that comes out of the two or three big moments in this issue, there's really not a whole lot to write home about. The story is just so quick because so much of it is Brainiac fighting a little girl controlled by a computer and then a double page splash of the new HQ and then Dawn Starr doing her space thing.
In a lot of ways, issue 311 is like a sorbet to clear the palate after the turd sandwich of that Omen storyline, to kind of like clear the decks and give us, you know, a little bit of new things, clear up some old stuff, give us a new headquarters, an actual romance. I mean, even the Legionnaires don't care what happened to the Omen.
Well, on the plus side, this volume of the Legion of Superheroes is quickly coming to an end. So we got that to look forward to.
Like 14, 15 issues, you know.
Not well, yeah, but it's quickly coming up. I think what, by the end of 1984?
84 is when Legion Volume 3 debuts. Yeah, but it's near the end.
Yeah. So just hang tight, people. We'll see if it gets better. That wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Matthew, what did we learn this week?
We learned that Nylor Skuggs, who wears Uggs, has hair plugs, eats dead bugs, puts salt on slugs, listens to Flatten Scruggs, takes anti-cholesterol drugs, hates chicken nugs, raises pugs, and knits nylon rugs, is also stupid.
I think we also learned that the collapse of a Legion Clubhouse is not the end, but only the beginning.
Which may or may not be an omen for this podcast. I'm not telling.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you have any thoughts, reactions, etc., jump over into our Discord server. It's completely free to join. Link in the show notes. We're excited to have you join us and all of the other cool Major Spoilers people who are already over there. We have a channel specifically for this show where you can go in and share your thoughts about everything Legion of Superheroes. So, until next time, I'm Steven Ford.
And I'm Blanket Snugs.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2023 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.